Welcome to Torah Imecha Nachyomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Vesser, and today we'll be studying Melachim Aleph, Perek Tet Zayin, Chapter 16. I'd like to take a minute to note that the chapter here is solely focused on Malchut Yisrael. And actually, since we were introduced to Yeravam in Perek 11, almost all of the chapters have been focused primarily on Malchut Yisrael. And I think that's really interesting because when Yeravam was given a promise that he was going to have a melucha, what we see is the lens of Sefer Melachim, Yirmiyahu turns his head and really looks at the north, thinking that this is going to be the primary kingdom. As we noted last time, they have the best land, they have the trade routes, they have most of the Shvatim. And what we see really in these Prakim, and especially in this one, is the dissolution of Malchut Yisrael, the sins that they have and how it causes their downfall. But we also see that there's a real honor given to Malchut Yisrael just by paying so much attention to them. And in this parak, we are going to be introduced to Ahav at the end of the parak, and Ahav is going to be our primary king for the next large number of Prakim, and the text is going to give him a lot of time, and he's going to get a very, very important Navi to speak to him, and that's Eliyahu HaNavi. And that's because I really believe that Malchut Yisrael was supposed to be the primary kingdom, and Malchut Yehuda was supposed to be the ancillary kingdom, the one that had the Beit HaMikdash. And now we're learning through these Prakim why that didn't happen, and the lens is going to switch back to Malchut Yehuda only towards the middle of Melachim Bet. But Malchut Yisrael is going to now have a lot of chances. The first chance was Yeravam, and he didn't fulfill his chance. He was what I call the first hope of Malchut Yisrael. And in this chapter, we're going to be introduced to really the second hope of Malchut Yisrael, and that's Ahav. Because although he's considered one of the worst kings, there is something about him that Eliyahu is going to fight for, who we're going to meet in the next parak. But first, we have to go from Baasha to Ahav. And in this parak, we're going to hear a lot of names. And if you think that's confusing to you, just imagine what it feels like to the people who are actually living through it. So Baasha, he wasn't anointed by a Navi, but he is overthrown by a Navi. Yehu ben Hanani comes and tells Baasha that his whole kingdom is going to be dissolved because of his sins, and he gets the same punishment as Yeravam ben Nevat. And we then see the pattern of kings in Malchut Yisrael come into play, where Yeravam has a son named Ela, and Ela rules for 2 years and then is killed along with his entire kingdom, or his entire dynasty. And the way that Ela is killed, Ela ben Baasha, is very interesting. In Pasuk Tet, it says, Vayikshor alav avado, his servant rebelled against him, and his servant's name was Zimri, Sar machatzit harechev. So basically, Ela ben Baasha is drunk, and he's in his palace in Tirzah, and his servant Zimri, and Zimri is called Sar Machatzit Harechev. He's the officer over half of the chariots. And if you remember that Nadav was also killed by a Sar Tzava, by an officer, but it was Baasha, and Baasha was the head of the army. Here, Ela is killed by a much lower level officer, someone who's officer over half of the chariots, and he's also completely drunk when Zimri kills him. Not exactly a hero's death. So now we're done, and Zimri kills out the entire house of Baasha, not just Ela himself, and Baasha's dynasty is over because of his sins. Now Zimri takes over, and his reign is even shorter than Ela ben Baasha's, even shorter than 2 years. In Pasuk Tet Vav, we read, Bishnat Esrim Sheva Shana La'asa Melech Yuda Malach Zimri Shiv'at Yamim B'tirza. In the 27th year of Asa of Yehuda, Zimri rules for 7 days in Tirza. V'ha'am chonim al givton asher l'plishtim. The nation at the time, we learn, was encamped in the city of Gibton against the Plishtim. Now we learn that when Ela was killed in his palace in Tirzah, the Jews were actually in the middle of a war against the Plishtim, and Ela was not there. And also, the Sar Tzava was not there. Also, the army was not there. They were all in Gibton fighting the war against the Plishtim. So Ela is killed by one of the lower members of the army, who then declares himself king in Tirzah. But just realize that the army isn't there. That's not the focus of the people at the time. So when people hear what happens in Pasuk Tet Zayin, Vayishma ha'am achonim lemor kashar zimri, v'gam hikat ha'melech, when the nation that's in the middle of this war in Givton, when they hear that Zimri rebelled and he killed Eliab ben Baasha, they are not happy about this. They don't want Zimri to be their king. They probably look down on him. V'yimlichu kol Yisrael et Omri, sar tzava, al Yisrael b'yom ha'u b'machaneh. They go and they anoint the sar tzava, the head of the army. And now they have a new king, Omri, and this is going to be a new dynasty. Vayale Omri v'chol Yisrael imo b'givton v'yetzuru al tirtza. So Omri and all the Jews who are with him, all the people from Yisrael who are with him at the war, they leave Givton and they go back to the capital city of Tirtza v'yetzuru al tirtza. They siege Tirtza. So now there's a civil war, basically, in Malchut Yisrael. First there was a civil war between Malchut Yisrael and Malchut Yudah, and now within Malchut Yisrael is a civil war. And Zimri, who really isn't very strong, so he can't stand up to the army and to its general. So Zimri, vayhikir od Zimri kil nilkadah ha'ir, when Zimri sees that the city is really captured, and they didn't really have to do that much to capture the city because it is the entire army with Omri, vayavo el armon beit ha'melech vayisrof alav et beit melech vayish vayamot. And he goes to the palace, and it says the palace is burnt on him, and he is killed. So there's a machloket mefarshim in terms of who burnt the palace. The language is a little bit difficult. Tzidat David and Radak read it that Omri built the palace, that it was burnt upon him by somebody else, and Zimri was just, while Zimri was in it. And Abarbanel and Rabbi Moshe Ashkenazi read it that Zimri actually burnt the palace himself to go out in a blaze of glory. It was his suicide. It was his last, it was his last way to kind of hurt the people. And I just want to point out where we've, how far we've come, that each successive death gets worse and worse. Meaning, Baasha was a general, and he killed out Yerovam's family. He killed out Nadav and Yerovam's family. It was an act of treason. But then his son, Eliab ben Baasha, is drunk when he's killed, and he's killed even not by a general. But then you have civil war, the burning of a palace. Malchut Yisrael is completely falling apart, and it doesn't even end there because the divisions continue because not everyone is happy with Omri. So Pasuk Kafet veChazek Ha'am Asher Acharei Omri Et Ha'am Asher Acharei Tivni Ben Ginat. There was another person named Tivni Ben Ginat, and some people liked him, and they thought that he should be king. So for a while, it wasn't even clear that Omri, the Sar Tzava, who killed the general who killed Zimri, was going to be king. Some people wanted this other person to be king, and that goes on for a little while until Vayamat Tivni, and Tivni died, perhaps from natural causes or perhaps killed by Omri. Vayimloch Omri, and now Omri is killed. Now, if you're having trouble keeping track of the names, just think of the disruptions going on in Malchut Yisrael with a new king every week. They have a complete lack of stability and an inability to fight the wars that they are already in. Remember, they're in a war against the Plishtim, and they can't move the country forward at all. And there's a refrain that's going on with each one of these kings, and that is, which year of Asa are they in? It says about Baasha that he was Bishnat Shalosh La'asa. He started reigning in the third year of Asa. And then his son Ela was Bishnat Esrim Vashesh La'asa in the 26th year of Asa. And then Zimri starts ruling Bishnat Esrim Vasheva Shana La'asa, and on, meaning Asa is stable. He's ruling for a long time. And the contrast is that in Malchut Yisrael, everything is really falling apart. And there's so many kings that are concurrent with Asa's reigns. Omri was just as bad as all the kings who came before him, and he continued to influence Bnei Israel to be bad as well. But he did bring a measure of stability to the country, and he ruled for 12 years, and also Omri is going to have generations who rule after him. And Omri is different than the other kings. There are some things that are different about him. Number one is the way he is introduced is that he is at the war with the people. So he's introduced as somebody who's protecting the people in a war. He's not away from them, sitting in, you know, a palace in safety while they're out fighting. He is with them. Also, something that we learn about Omri is that he buys Har Shomron from a person named Shemer, who's the owner. And Chazal really praise Omri for this, because in Gemara Sanhedrin, it says that he added land to Yisrael, and he really followed the tradition of Abraham, who brought the Ma'arat HaMachpelah, and David, who bought Yerushalayim. Chazal think this is very praiseworthy to buy land and not to just take it. And in addition, Omri names the land Shomron, and the name of the person who owned it was Shemer. So ostensibly, he named it after the person who owned it before him. And Rabbi Ben Hillel points out that this is also an act of humility, that Omri names the land after either what the land's name was before or the owner who had it before him. And that's a mark of humility. He didn't name it after himself. Now, we're not saying that Omri was good. It says in the Pasuk that he did bad in the eyes of Hashem. But we are seeing that he's breaking this sense of selfishness that was present in Malchut Yisrael that was really started by Yerovam, saying, "Oh, Bnei Yisrael, Rav Lecha Me'avlot Yerushalayim, it's too far for you to go to Yerushalayim. You should just worship Hashem here," introducing a measure of selfishness into the worship of Hashem. And we know that it extends even further than that, because it was all selfishness on Yerovam's part. He did it because he didn't want to lose his power. He was not looking out for the best interest of the people. And this is the first time since then that we're starting to see a little bit of selflessness. A king who, while Omri is bad to Hashem, there does seem to be a sense that he isn't necessarily bad to his people. There was this amazing archaeological find called the Mesha Stele, which is this big slab of iron that's dated to about 800 BCE, so around this time. And it's written by the king of Moab, who is a concurrent monarch. And on the Mesha Stele, they reference that the house of Omri oppressed the Moabites. And what's really interesting is that there isn't any reference in our text to Omri having conquered Moab at all. But it does say in Pasuk Kaf Zayin, verse 27, V'yetzer divrei Omri asher asah, u'gvurato asher asah, haluhim k'tufim al sefer divrei hayamim l'malchei Yisrael. All the rest of what Omri did and the deeds of strength that he did. So perhaps though strength refers to the fact that he oppressed the Moabites. But what's important to Tanakh is not his strength. And that is, do you fulfill the two criteria that we're looking for in a king? Number one, are you good to Hashem? Do you lead the people to Hashem? Are you a good conduit? Number two, are you good to the people? Can you be a person who serves the people well? And it seems to be that in the first case, Omri was terrible to Hashem. But in the second case, it could be that he was okay and good to his people. And this is a dichotomy that we are going to see very much played out by his son Ahav. There's another hint to Omri's military strength, and that is the marriage of his son Ahav to Izebel, the daughter of Etbaal of Tzidon. We see that, like Shlomo, Omri is reaching out to other countries to make marriage treaties, and maybe the reason he reached out to Tzidon in the north was to help him fight Aram or Moab, or perhaps it was for commerce. Either way, Ahav, Omri's son, takes his wife Izebel back to Shomron, which Omri has now established as the capital, and the entire country is now also going to be known as Shomron. Sometimes it's going to be called Malchut Yisrael, sometimes it's going to be called Shomron. And while Ahav probably had many wives, Izebel is going to be the only one we hear about because of her large influence on Ahav. And now, finally, we meet Ahav in Pasuk Lamed Al, verse 31. Vayehi hanakel lechto v'chata Yerovam ben Nevat. It says about Ahav, it was like nothing for him to go in the sins of Yerovam ben Nevat, meaning he did much worse. What did he do? Vayikach isha at Izebel bat et Baal melch Tzidonim, vayelech vayavod et Baal vayishtachavu lo. He married Izebel, the daughter of Et Baal, the king of Tzidon. Just listen to this name. His name is Et Baal, of the Baal, which is the name of idolatry. And Ahav went vayavod et Baal. He himself worshipped Baal, and he bowed down to it. And he didn't just do that, but in Pasuk Lamed Bet, Vayakam Mizbeach LeBaal, he built an altar to the Baal, Beit HaBaal, Asher Bana B'Shomron. He moved on from these golden calves where they were idols, kind of, but you serve Hashem at them. And Ahav says, like, let's just go all the way. Well, you know, what's the difference between serving a god at an idol and then just, you know, take one more step and let's serve the Baal. That's what the rest of the countries are doing. Let's just become part of that. And bringing Izebel in definitely brought that influence into the northern tribes. And then in Pasuk Lamed Gimel, we see Vayasach Achav et HaShera. Achav also planted Ashera trees, which was the feminine part of the Baal. Vayosev Achav lasot lachisat Hashem Elokei Yisrael mikol malchei Yisrael Asher yulifanav. Achav goes on and he angered Hashem more than any of the kings of Yisrael who were before him. And then we have the last verse, Biyamav, in his days, Banachiel Beit Ha'eli at Yericho. A person named Chiel from Beit El went and built up the city of Yericho. So if you remember, there was a special curse about the city of Yericho given by Yehoshua. And the curse was that whoever builds Yericho, his first son will die as he starts building the city, and his last son will die as he sets up the gates of the city, as he finishes the city, and ostensibly all the children will die in between. And the Pasuk says, Ba'aviram b'choro yista, with his oldest son Aviram, he set up the foundation, meaning his son Aviram died as he set up the foundation. Ubishkuv tziro hitziv delataha, and his youngest son Shkuv died as he set up the doors of the city, the gates. Kedvar Hashem asher diber biyad Yoshua ben Nun, just like Hashem told Yoshua. So I want to just break down these sins of Achav, because there's really three. Number one is marrying Yezebel. Number two is worshiping the Baal. And number three is Chiel building Yericho. And when you look at these three sins, it's like one of these things just doesn't belong here. Chiel building Yericho, okay, first of all, it's not Achav. And second of all, it was so much smaller than the other two, which was, you know, the king is intermarried, bringing in Baal into the country. And like, okay, Chiel went against Yoshua's curse. But I want to say that these three things are actually three categories of things. And you could look at them in one of two ways. One way to look at them is that Achav went against something that was in the realm of Giloy Arayot, inappropriate marriages, by marrying Yezebel, Avodah Zarah, by bringing Baal, and Shfichu Damin, which was the killing of Chiel's sons. It's something that Chiel did, but is attributed to Achav with the words Biyamav, in his days. And the second way that you can categorize Achav's sins is that he went against three major values. The first value that he went against was a value of Am Yisrael by bringing in a queen from another country. The second value he went against was Torah Yisrael by looking to a totally different God. Even Yerovam didn't do that. Against what it says, all the mitzvot that it says in the Torah are don't do idolatry. And then the third one is a little bit more complicated, but I think that Achav is going against the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael. Why did Yoshua say not to build the city of Yericho? Because it was important to realize that Hashem was the one that conquered the city for you. And if you can realize that, you will know that Eretz Yisrael is something to be earned. You don't just get it and you don't have to do anything else about it. But rather, since Hashem was the one who gave it to you, and that's shown by the fact that Hashem conquered Yericho miraculously, you should realize that the rest of the country was conquered miraculously also, even if you couldn't see it as much. So don't build Yericho. It's not a regular city. It's a city that means something. It's a monument to the fact that Eretz Yisrael needs to be earned. And when Chiel builds it up, it's because Achav set up a society that was able to reject this notion. We don't need to serve Hashem in Eretz Yisrael. It's coming to us. We don't need to earn it anymore. Breaking that connection between Eretz Yisrael is something that we need to work for. And Eretz Yisrael is just something that we have. And it doesn't have to do with our actions at all. And that's why I think Chiel's sin is listed as the third of Achav's. Because maybe even in a way, there was a progression. Because when you marry someone from another country and take on their gods, so it's a rejection of Hashem in your lives. And that's what Chiel was saying. And that's why we end it with Achav. And now B'nai Yisrael in Malchut Yisrael are in a really bad place, because they are under the rule of a king from Yisrael who's doing real idolatry, and a queen from another country. Thank you for studying together. Le'ilar Nishmat Frida Bat Moshe Eliyahu.